Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. Find me on IG at Rambling and Gambling and email me ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. It's our big Super Bowl preview episode. We've actually got not one, not two, but three amazing interviews for you. First up, Fabian Sommers back. Remember, he's our German NFL handicapping buddy. You can find him at football-handicapping.com. Fabian's going to give us his big picture take on Sunday's matchup. Then the prop queen's paying us another visit. Arielle Epstein, now a host and analyst for Yahoo Sportsbook. She's also a betting analyst for MLB Network and NBA TV. Arielle's going to give us her five favorite props for the big game. We'll do a cash or trash in that segment too. And last but not least, a guy I've never had on the pod before, although I did put him on Fox 5 DC once, Dan Stupp. He's the content manager at both Play Virginia and Play Maryland, where he covers gambling. Dan's going to give us some nutty numbers about just how many people are going to be betting on this game. Anyway, here we go. Let's get it started with Fabian Sommers. Fabian, before we get to the matchup, I've just got to ask, is there much buildup to the Super Bowl happening in Germany right now? For instance, if I go to the grocery store here on the East Coast, and not even in one of the markets that these teams are from, there's like an assortment of pre-decorated Super Bowl cakes just ready to go. I imagine it's a very different story out your way.
It's exactly the same, to be honest, or let's say close to the same.
Really?
So over here, yes. So like every grocery store in Germany has like Super Bowl week, and they basically want to bring the, I'm saying, quote unquote, American culture, because we Germans think that Americans eat hot dogs, chicken wings, and burgers, and that's it. So I know there are like 52 states with tons of different cultures and lots of great food in like every town, but we Germans believe that you are mostly eating like chicken wings and burgers. So every grocery store in Germany has like that Super Bowl week where they have like NFL merchandise. Like you can buy footballs, you can buy NFL cups, you can buy some jerseys, some caps. And then there's also all these crazy offers for like chicken wings, burgers, hot dogs, and chips, and Doritos, and Lay's chips, and all that stuff like that. So even if you don't follow football at all, you will realize that there must be something going on that week. Like there must be some big sporting event just by walking through the grocery store.
I love that. And I'm really surprised by that. I have more questions about this. I have a few more questions about this, but I'll save them so we can talk a little football first. When you were last on this podcast, it was back in November. The Bengals were 5-3, but they were coming off a bad loss to the Jets, who had Mike White at quarterback for that game. They had a bunch of trouble with Jacksonville. They'd lost to the Bears. The Rams were 7-1. They'd just gotten Von Miller. And while they had looked pretty unstoppable to that point, they were 7-1. They'd beaten a bunch of crappy teams. They were coming off wins against the Texans, Lions, and Giants. Those were their three most recent wins at the time. So here's how I'm hoping that we can start with this. Before we get into the matchup, can you please give me kind of your big picture take on each of these individual teams and how the season has panned out for each of them? Let's start with the Bengals.
Yeah, so the Bengals, and I don't want to take anything away from their run. They deserve to be in the Super Bowl, no question about that. But I think when you look at the history of Super Bowl participants and where all these, let's say, recent or last 20 Super Bowl teams stack up against the Bengals, the Bengals are one of the worst Super Bowl teams, just depending on or just based on some underlying metrics. So when we take a look at EPA per play, for example, I think Ben Baldwin tweeted it out today. The Bengals have the third worst offense among the last 22 Super Bowl teams since 2011. Only the 2012 Ravens with Joe Flacco and the 2015 Broncos with an aging and declining Peyton Manning were worse than the Bengals offense. So the Bengals, I think in general, over the course of the season, they have not really beaten anyone significantly until the playoffs. They only had that win against the Chiefs, which was, I would I don't want to say it's somewhat fluky, but they had a lot of help during that game with penalties and some terrible Chiefs clock management in the end. And a lot of that went into their favor. But over the course of the season, they have some really ugly losses, like the one against the Jets. They almost lost against the Jaguars on primetime on like Thursday Night Football. And they didn't really have many convincing wins on their schedule. And their offense, when we look at DVOA, they ranked 18th in DVOA after the regular season. Their defense was also, I think, average at best. So just in terms of pure quality, or let's say overall team strength, the Bengals are certainly one of the worst, teams to reach the Super Bowl in recent history. But what's so interesting about them is that I think, especially their offense, they have a very low floor. They have a terrible offensive line, but they have a very, very high ceiling with Joe Burrow, who has been playing absolutely phenomenal this season, and that great receiving staff like Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd, and also CJ Uzoma coming up later in the season. So it was a very inconsistent season from them. Lots of up and downs. Some games were pretty bad. Low floor, high ceiling. Then they had these great games like against the Ravens, who were depleted in their secondary. Then they had a great game against the Chiefs. And then in the playoffs, I mean, again, I don't want to take anything away from them, but they had a close one against the Raiders. They had a very close one against the Titans, where their defense made a very crucial interception late in the game, where Joe Burrow got sacked 9 times. I think there's never been a team that won a football game despite their quarterback getting sacked 9 times. And then in the championship game, they came out with a terrible offensive game plan against the Chiefs. We're down by 21-3 at some point. And before halftime, the Chiefs were up 21-10, and they had the ball with like 13 seconds at the 1-yard line. So if the Chiefs don't fuck it up, they get into the end zone and the game is over. And the Bengals still found a way to win. I mean, kudos to them. They also made some great defensive adjustments. But just looking at overall team strength, underlying metrics, and how they got to the Super Bowl, they have earned it, they have deserved it, but they are definitely not, they have not been on a convincing route to the Super Bowl, I would say.
I will just point out those two Super Bowl offenses that ranked worst, the Flacco Ravens and the Manning Broncos. Granted, they had great defenses, but they did both win those games.
Yes, 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 exactly. And that's what's so fascinating about football is that when it comes to the playoffs, and even though you have not been playing a great regular season, it's like just one win at a time. You just need to win your upcoming game. There's no best of five, best of seven. You can really catch a hot streak. Yeah, you can win due to some crazy variance, and that's all it takes to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, I think the Niners were favored against the Ravens in 2012. The Panthers were favored against the Broncos, I think also by like 4 points or something, or -4.5 in the big game. But these teams, it's entirely possible that they can pull out a win. I mean, being 5 or 4 points favorites, that's just a win probability of like 65 or 64%. So still 36% of the time you would expect the underdog to win.
How about the Rams?
The Rams are also a very fascinating case. So I was not really high on them coming into the season because I thought that the signing of Matthew Stafford was a little bit overblown, because I thought that Stafford has always been the same guy, great upside, but also in for a lot of brain farts during like any game. And that's basically what we also saw in some games. He had like the bad pick sixes against the Titans, against the Niners. But overall, I think that Sean McVay really constructed an offense that worked very well and where Stafford was able to play up to his strength. Like one of the most productive deep passers during the season. And even though he had like some games where really had like these bad mistakes, we always saw that this offense has such a high floor, like a good offensive line, a great scheme by Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford, who can play up to a very big ceiling, Cooper Kupp, at the beginning, Robert Woods, then Odell Beckham, who got merged into that offense more and more as the season went on. I mean, Tyler Higbee played a big role. So they always had that incredible high floor paired with a defense that can take over games, especially on their defensive line. I think the Von Miller hiring was great midway through the season because Aaron Donald is like the best player in the league, but they really needed one force on the edges. Like only having Leonard Floyd didn't really make it. So as soon as a team was able to, I would not say shut down Aaron Donald because you cannot shut him down, but when a team found ways to play around Aaron Donald, there was not enough firepower on the edges. And Von Miller really sparked that unit as a whole. And yeah, that combination fueled them to the Super Bowl. I mean, against the Niners, they could have lost that game. I think they were the better team over four quarters, but at some point they were down 7-17 and they could have easily lost that game. I mean, Jacquees Guitart dropped that crazy interception, or must be interception late in the game, and maybe that game would be over then. Yeah? But yeah, overall, I think the Rams were a pretty good football team with a high floor on offense, with a defense with some superstars that can take over games. And yeah, I also think that they are very deserving to be in the big game.
You mentioned the Von Miller addition. What do you think of how the OBJ, the Beckham acquisition turned out?
I think it turned out very well because I think at the beginning, the Rams had some issues because Robert Woods was more of a slot receiver. And Odell Beckham is more like a outside threat who can run all those single receiver side outside isolated routes. And so I think that at that point, Sean McVay really had to adjust the playbook a little bit to Odell Beckham. But as the season went on, he got worked more and more into the offense. And I think he's a very important piece because on the backside, when he's like the only receiver on one side, he can really draw some coverage and open some space for the other guys. And that's very nice to have, especially when you consider that Robert Woods went out with an ACL.
What stands out to you when it comes to these two teams matching up?
The big mismatch in the trenches, no doubt about it. So just when we take a look at the Bengals offensive line, I mean, Jonah Williams, Quinton Spain, Trey Hopkins, Hakeem Adeniji, and Isaiah Prince. So this is like one of the worst offensive lines in the league, and especially the interior line, like Spain, Hopkins, and Adeniji. I would argue that it might be the worst interior offensive line in the entire league. And that is playing against Aaron Donald. So, and then you have right tackle Isaiah Prince, who's got beaten by a lot of pass rushers this year. He's now facing Von Miller. So this is a crazy mismatch. I mean, we all said that the Bengals would have a mismatch against the Raiders, edge rush against the Chiefs with Chris Jones. But this is a completely different level now facing Aaron Donald and Von Miller. So this is like a really, really a terrible matchup for the Bengals. And I'm very interested to see how they approach the game because against the Chiefs, they came out with a, I would not call it run first approach, but out of their first 12 first downs, like 7 were runs. And they went for like an average of 2 yards per carry with just one big breakout run by Joe Mixon down the right sideline. But it was a terrible offense approach to come out. I mean, now against the Rams, I think the only rational approach would be put the ball in Joe Burrow's hands and let him get the ball out quickly and let him cook on some underneath routes because the Rams defense has some issues defending the middle of the field. They rank, I think, third worst over the course of the season, defending passes over the middle with between 0 and 15 air yards. And those are spaces where CJ Uzoma, if he's going to play, Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins can attack all day long. And I think this will be the path for success for the Bengals. Just don't let the pass rush arrive too often and just try to play around with it. I don't think they will be successful at running the ball. The Rams completely shut down the Niners run game last week. And now we are talking about a much worse offensive line that is not great at running the football. And I just don't see how that offensive line for the Bengals will survive against the pass or at pass protection and against the run. And then on the other side, we have the Rams offensive line, who has played extremely well this season against a defensive line for the Bengals that is not really good at pass rushing. Their pass rushing grade on the season by Pro Football Focus ranks just 21st. They have Trey Hendrickson on the edge, who is like one of the best edge rushers in the NFL this year. But the rest is not really great at rushing the passer. DJ Reader and BJ Hill are like a brute force down the middle who can really stop the run. And I think they will make it very hard for the Rams to run the ball through the middle. Sam Hubbard is not like the great edge rusher on the other side next to Trey Hendrickson. So the Bengals really struggle to generate consistent pressure. That will be an issue against Matthew Stafford, because Matthew Stafford has been killing the blitz all season long. He's averaging like over 0.5 EPA per pass against blitzes. And just for comparison, Aaron Rodgers in his great MVP season last year, he was averaging like 0.3 EPA per play on average. So Stafford has been massive against the blitz, or not only Stafford, but Sean McVay and the scheme and Stafford in general. And the Bengals, their defense is not really used to blitz a lot. They have one of the lowest blitz frequencies in the league. They want to rush with four, or rather want to rush with four, and they play lots of zone coverage behind it. So I think the path for success for the Bengals defense is really do some funky stuff and hope for mistakes. Because if they just play like their four-man rush with some zone coverage behind it, I think it won't be enough to stop the Rams. So overall, I think the Rams have a great matchup in the trenches. And Joe Burrow is also has like the same kind of profile as Matthew Stafford. Joe Burrow has been phenomenal against the blitz this year. He has 92 passing grade against the blitz, which is absurdly high, really absurdly high. And I think the Rams will probably try the same approach like the Bengals. So I can really see both defenses being ultra conservative on defense, trying to get pressure with a four-man rush, play some zone coverage behind it, and really make the opposing quarterback work down the field. Take the underneath option. Don't give up big plays. And then it depends on which defensive line can take over and which quarterback can make more plays against the pass rush. And then, yeah, everything arrives at the Rams being 4-point favorites for a reason. And I think the mismatch in the trenches is a big reason for it. So to me, it comes down to which quarterback can make more plays against that defensive line. And I give the Rams clearly the edge here. But I also think that the Super Bowl line at -4 is like perfectly set. There's usually we don't really have big edges on the Super Bowl line. This one is perfect.
That was a great breakdown. It sounds like on paper, you are really leaning Rams. However, like you said, this is not a best of seven. You never know what can happen in one game, in particular with a guy as hot as Joe Burrow.
Yes, yes, exactly. So at -3, I would have played the Rams. At +6, I would have played the Bengals, but this number really, I think my number on the game is -4.5. So there's not really any edge on -4 on the Super Bowl, where it's like the most efficient football game all year long. The Rams clearly are favorites. I expect them to win. If like the Bengals money line drops down later in the week and we will get a better Rams money line, I might just sprinkle some on it, but it's definitely not any edge for me to make a full play.
Yeah, I think this is going to surprise people. You mentioned how efficient this game is, the most efficient game, the most efficient line of the year. You don't really bet very much on the Super Bowl, correct? Even though you are this really respected NFL handicapper, you bet all season long, you're kind of done at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right. It's not always the case. I had a play on the 2019 Super Bowl between the Niners and the Chiefs. I didn't have any plays last year. I don't have any plays this year. It's just like I don't want to force anything. And usually you don't really have a big edge on the Super Bowl because it's so efficient and there's so much money and the market usually gets it pretty accurate. And then there's no reason for me to force anything. And I'm also not a big props bettor at all. So I know some dudes, some really sharp dudes who have like hundreds of props prop bets on the Super Bowl. And I have tons of respect for the grind, but I just don't bet props regularly. So I'm not really placing too much money on the big game. I'm just going to enjoy, drink some beers, have some fun, and see whether the Bengals can pull the upset.
Discipline, man. That's probably why you make money doing this. For the rest of us schmoes, us really casual gamblers who are going to bet on this, whether we have an edge or not, do you have any advice for the casual gamblers of the world going into this?
I think it's already too late probably, but in general, if you want to bet props on the Super Bowl, you want to be very early. In general, you also want to be early on like overplays, because so many guys are going to rush to the window and bet all these overs in general. It's just like what the casual bettor wants to bet on the big game. It doesn't want to bet too many unders. So if you want to bet overs, try to be early. And if you want to bet unders, probably wait a little bit until later in the week to hit back some unders. And for the rest of the props, hundreds of props, try to be early, because these prop markets on the Super Bowl, they have higher limits than usual because so many people are betting them, and it's getting so much media attention nowadays. So there are also higher limits on Super Bowl props, and you have a lot more access to them through various books and sports books. But still, try to line shop. There's no reason to waste like 10 cents on any line. Try to have different outs, try to have different options to bet. Line shop, you can use like various platforms for that, or just go through all your sports books and find the best line or the best number if you want to bet. And yeah, like I said, in general, try to be early. Try to bet early on overs, try to bet a little bit later on unders, and that would be my best advice.
Before I let you go, can I ask you a couple more questions about the Super Bowl in Germany?
Sure.
Kickoff's 6:30 here on the East Coast. What time is that for you, Fabian?
0:30, half past midnight.
Are you going to watch it live?
Of course.
Okay. Is it, and excuse me for not knowing this, but I do think it's really interesting. Is it the American broadcast that you guys will get? Is there a German broadcast of the game?
I can't really tell you what I'm going to watch this week, but usually there is like a free TV channel showing the Super Bowl, and the crew from the broadcast also inside the stadium with in a TV box. But I don't really like to watch German broadcasts on football. I usually try to watch everything in the English version, try to watch on Game Pass. Because also in Germany, there is, so when you watch the Super Bowl in America, you have like 80, 90 different ads between the breaks. And over here, it's like 5 ads. So it's repeating all the time, and it's pretty annoying. So I try to watch the English version if possible, depending on who I'm, or depending on where I'm going to watch it.
How will you watch? For instance, I'm going to like a little Super Bowl gathering, you know, a bunch of people watching it together. I guess maybe it's different because it starts so late, or so early rather, in Germany. How are you going to watch it?
I'm going to watch with some friends, and usually everyone takes a day off on Monday, or tries to start work later than usual. But we are going to watch with some friends. Don't know how many exactly, but we are probably going to meet at like 6, 7, 8 p.m. in the evening, grab some food, maybe some Kentucky Fried Chicken, or put something on the barbecue, something like that. And then we just talk, do some fun stuff, maybe play some PlayStation, some Madden or so, and get ready for the big game.
I love that. That sounds like a great time, Fabian. This is awesome. Awesome breakdown. Love hearing about the Super Bowl in Germany. That really surprised me. Where can the listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SUUMA810.
And what else? Plug away, man. You got the handicapping website, right? You want to give that out?
Yeah, it's my Slack channel that I run during the season. It's football-handicapping.com. And you can also find me on some weekly shows, like I do the weekly matchbook show with Aiden O'Sullivan, Drew Dinsick, and Rob Pizzola every Wednesday on, I think it's 9:45 on the East Coast in the morning. We will also have a show tomorrow, but basically talking some matchup stuff, some props, and yeah.
But so that'll be Wednesday, the day that this podcast comes out.
Yeah, exactly. But in general, the best way to find me is on Twitter.
Great follow, Fabian, man. Good luck this weekend, or I guess have fun. You're not really going to be betting it. And thanks for coming on. Awesome as always, man.
Thanks for having me, Josh. Have a good day.
All right. The prop queen is here. Arielle Epstein, host and analyst for Yahoo Sportsbook, also an analyst for MLB Network and NBA TV. Thanks for coming back on, prop queen.
Thanks for having me. Big week this week in Super Bowl. I'm pumped.
Huge week. All right. I want to do your top five Super Bowl props. I'm really excited about this. And then we're also going to do what we're now calling cash or trash. We were still calling this Josh's juice last time you were on, but it's the exact same thing. For the props, do you have them ordered? Should we start with number five and then work our way to number one?
You know, I haven't really put anything in an order just because it's the Super Bowl. And at this rate, with all these sharp lines, everything has just as good of a chance of hitting as they do of losing. That's just my motto in the playoffs. I actually just made this joke on another podcast I was on. When people ask me to come on for one best bet, I always change it up. I know that sounds bad. The thing is, I have gone through so many weeks in the NFL where I'll go on shows and I'll give out one prop. That's my best bet. It can't lose. It's amazing. Every time I do it, well, I shouldn't say every. A lot of the times when I do that, it ends up losing. It's just a jinx thing. I'm so superstitious that I will not tell you that this is 100% going to hit. It's a lock. I'll give it out on every show of the week. I'm going to change it up.
Okay, no problem. So this will be five props that you like equally. Does that work?
Five props that I bet.
Perfect. All right, let's get going. The first prop is what?
First prop is over 1.5 field goals on Cincinnati Bengals kicker Evan McPherson. This is a player that Bengals fans would probably vote for MVP. I mean, I'm not kidding. Behind their quarterback, Joe Burrow, McPherson has been the reason the Bengals have stayed in close games, even stayed in games they were getting blown out in. Just look back to the game against the Chiefs. McPherson was the first one to put points on the board for Cincinnati. He's been so clutch for the Bengals. He's been one of those players that no matter what the distance is, he'll be able to go out there and kick. That's why I like the attempts. And I'm going over 1.5 field goals that he's going to make it. I'm just saying the attempts will be there for McPherson to go over this. Cincinnati ranks 20th inside the red zone in scoring rate. That's so bad. I mean, you're a team that's in the Super Bowl and you struggle to score inside the red zone. Now you're going up against one of the best front sevens in the league. That's why I could see them attacking this terrible Rams secondary, who ranks fourth worst in receiving yards allowed to wide receivers. The Bengals can get downfield. It's just, can they score once they're there? They don't need to, if they have Evan McPherson to be able to kick those field goals anyway.
Really nice kicking conditions in LA as well.
Yep. Inside in a stadium in SoFi, it makes it much better.
Prop number two, what do you got?
Prop number two, I'm going with the over 4.5 total tackles on Aaron Donald. Now the Rams are going to be up against one of the worst offensive lines in the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals have allowed for the most sacks this year in the postseason. Aaron Donald coming off of that edge, I mean, he's going to be able to attack anyone on this Bengals offensive line. He also it has been one of the biggest liabilities for the books for Super Bowl MVP. At 4.5 tackles, he actually is around plus 100, which Von Miller is even higher, around plus 120. The books are telling us that Donald has the better shot of going over this number. He also, prior to the postseason, went over 4.5 total tackles in about 5 or 6 straight games. He just hasn't had that great of a postseason. Donald went over this in 1 game. I think it was the divisional round. I'm looking for Donald to put up a big game this week because he still is one of those players on this Rams team that has a chip on his shoulder after losing a couple of years ago in the big game.
I like that one. Did you look at the overall sacks prop for this game at all? I think for both teams combined, I've seen it at 5.5 in a bunch of different places.
I have seen it. I just don't know if I'm willing to bet it because it's still a lot of sacks. I mean, yes, could the Rams do it on their own? Sure. I just don't really like going into those markets that the books try to bait you with. There's a reason that those numbers don't really get posted in the regular season. You really rarely see total sacks in a game as a prop. If I haven't handicapped it all year and I don't have a method to prove that it's working, then I probably, for myself and for giving out picks, I stay away from those kinds of props because I just haven't bet them yet this year.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Prop number 3, what do you got?
I might as well just go with the other player on the total tackles props, and that's Von Miller. This is a player that he also has Super Bowl experience, and not only does he have Super Bowl experience, obviously not with the Rams, it was with the Broncos, he's a Super Bowl MVP. The last defensive player to win Super Bowl MVP is Von Miller. The reason I know that is because that was part of my handicap last year when I loved Devin White to be the next linebacker to win Super Bowl MVP at 100-1, and I'm still bitter over it. Not saying that Miller's going to be a Super Bowl MVP this year. I still like Aaron Donald more than him just because of the storyline. Miller's just going to be able to eat off this offensive line also. He's been coming off the other edge of Aaron Donald. They've been playing opposite each other the whole postseason. This postseason, Von Miller has actually been playing better than Donald when it comes to total tackles. Miller's gone over his total tackle prop in all but the NFC Championship game. Here's what's interesting. Miller's number's been at 3.5 the whole playoffs. He went over that number, as I mentioned, in 2 out of the 3 playoff games that the Rams played. He didn't go over it in the NFC Championship game, yet the number in all sports books has moved up to 4.5. To me, that's a little fishy because you're talking about a player who didn't go over his prop last week, which, by the way, was juiced to -160 to the over 3.5. It went under, and you still moved his prop up to 4.5. It's just going to be more opportunities for anyone on this defense to create some more tackles because the Bengals offensive line is just so bad.
So you have both Von Miller and Aaron Donald over 4.5 total tackles each. Are you worried at all that they could eat into each other's tackles?
Not so much eat into each other's tackles. Definitely worried that one will go over and the other won't. The thing is, there's been many games this year where they both have had at least 5 tackles. If there were games where both of them didn't go over, I probably would have stayed away. The fact that there were about 4 games in the regular season and I think maybe 1 playoff game, I'd have to double check, but definitely about 4 games in the regular season where both of them had 5 or more tackles led me to betting this on both players because I should at least go 1-1. There's still a chance I can go 2-0.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned Von Miller, the last defensive player to win MVP. He is 40-1 this year. I just looked on FanDuel. Aaron Donald, 16-1.
Yeah. That's actually one of the three biggest liabilities at BetMGM, which is who Yahoo works with. Aaron Donald, Evan McPherson, and Joe Burrow. Those are their 3 biggest Super Bowl MVP liabilities.
McPherson, the kicker?
Yeah. I'm telling you, Bengals fans love him. Now, here's the thing. Unless Joe Burrow throws 3 interceptions in this game, he's not winning MVP if the Bengals win. Joe Burrow's winning Super Bowl MVP. If he does happen to throw a few picks or turn the ball over, fumble it because he's had so much pressure on him because his offensive line stinks, and they end up winning the game because Evan McPherson wins it 9-6, then maybe McPherson wins the Super Bowl, Super Bowl MVP. I don't see that world. I see if the Bengals win this game, it's going to Burrow. The Rams, I don't necessarily believe that's the case because Matt Stafford's been known to throw the football away and turn the ball over multiple times. If he has a game with 2 picks or so, then this is going to some other weapon in Los Angeles. Bengals, it's going to take a lot for Joe Burrow to not win this award if the Bengals win the Super Bowl.
I like another long shot Super Bowl MVP candidate that I'm pretty sure you're bringing up here in a minute anyway. So keep on going. We've done three so far. Give me prop number four.
Prop number four is for the wide receiver on the Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase, to go over his longest reception prop of 27 and a half yards. This has a lot to do with the Rams secondary being so bad. Fourth most receiving yards allowed to wide receivers this year. Also, when looking at the two teams, I was trying to compare, because for Yahoo, we had to do this video where we had to discuss, there's a contest going on and they ask you questions. My question was, who's going to have a longer catch, Ja'Marr Chase or Cooper Kupp? Of course, the book is telling you it's Cooper Kupp with the receiving yards, a longest reception prop of 31 and a half. Chase is sitting at 27 and a half. I just see Ja'Marr Chase being able to attack this Rams secondary better because, well, if you've looked at the different games where both these teams have allowed for 30 or more yards on a longest catch, the Rams have allowed more catches for over 30 yards than the Bengals have. It's not by much. It's by about two receivers. So there's been 14 games where the Rams have allowed for a 30-yard catch or more, and there's been 12 games where the Bengals allowed for a 30-yard catch or more. Plus, if you're going to be playing from behind, if you're the Bengals and the books are saying you're a 4-point, 4.5-point underdog, that's going to result in the Bengals having to throw the football more. I'm not going with any more Ja'Marr Chase props just because he's up against probably one of the best cornerbacks in the league in Jalen Ramsey. That's why I'm not looking for quantity when it comes to receiving yards, receptions. I'm looking for one big catch between these two former LSU champions who played on that championship team together, just so they could say that they did it in the Super Bowl. That's why I like the over on Ja'Marr Chase longest catch.
He does seem to get open for at least one big one pretty much every single game, but that's interesting. You were expecting this to happen, even though there's a really good chance Jalen Ramsey's on him the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, it's one catch. There's a good chance for that one catch he comes up with the big play. There also is just such a dynamic between these two. I think there are definitely better receiving yards props to look at, not longest reception, receiving yards props, such as T. Higgins, who's been attacking defenses this postseason for Cincinnati. When it comes to Ja'Marr Chase, I feel like I have to have something on him. He's the best receiver on this team. He's a deep threat. He's one of the best deep threats in football this year. The Rams secondary is so bad that Ja'Marr Chase can cut you up, whether it's on just like a post route, or he could do some crazy, there could be some crazy trick play that they throw at you and he could take it Deebo Samuel style for 70 yards upfield after a short pass. I mean, you never know. That's why I like Ja'Marr Chase for his longest receptions prop, and the Rams just struggle against these top-notch receivers.
Prop queen, here we go. Number 5 of 5. What do you have for us?
I'm going with the over 17 and a half yards on the longest catch for the Rams wide receiver, Van Jefferson. I love Van Jefferson. He has been one of the X factors of this Rams offense. Every Super Bowl team has an X factor. There was Mecole Hardman for the Chiefs. There was Jacoby Jones for the Ravens. Now you're looking at Van Jefferson. Last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, there's really not much film on him because he got hurt in the first half. He played in the second half, and unfortunately, every time Matt Stafford targeted him, it was a bad throw. The first half, there was a throw that should have been Van Jefferson's ball, according to the announcers. Unfortunately, it went to some other, I forget what, it was like the backup tight end or something, and they ended up, he ended up not catching it, but Van Jefferson probably would have caught that deep throw. He went over the 17 and a half yard prop for his longest reception in about 5 or 6 straight games leading, even before the playoffs. And he went over it in both the first two playoff games. It makes me like it even more that he didn't go over it in the NFC Championship game. He's only good for 2 to 3 catches a game. It's okay, though. He seems to find a way to get open at least once for this deep ball.
I really, really like this bet. They always at least try to go deep to Jefferson. Also, I kind of like him as a long shot to win MVP because he basically only gets the deep balls. Let's say he catches 2 of them and it's an otherwise low scoring game. He's 100-1 to win MVP. Are you with me on this? Do you see any value there? It's a long shot. It's not likely to happen, but I like the value.
It's such a long shot. He would have to have at least 2 touchdowns. And that scares me because he doesn't get much quantity. His targets aren't really there. If he was one of those players that there's been a handful of games this year that he has the game. He, let's say there's four or five games this year, he has that game, then sure. He hasn't really had that game. He gets two catches every time, two to three. That's why just the quantity for him isn't there for me to get Super Bowl MVP. It would have to go at that rate to probably Matt Stafford. The only other value play that I saw, I know people like Aaron Donald, I just don't see him getting it because I mean, this would have to be a really, really low scoring game where the Rams don't score. I don't see that happening against the Bengals defense. I really liked Cooper Kupp. That was the only other player at 6-7 to 1 that I thought had a good shot at Super Bowl MVP, who's not a quarterback. He is one of those players that can go out for 150 to 200 yards and score 2 to 3 touchdowns. I mean, he's that lethal. No one can stop him. How many of us are watching the NFC Championship game wondering how on earth he got open for 2 touchdowns? It's unbelievable what Cooper Kupp can do. That's why he at 6-7 to 1 is good value, because essentially you're like betting a money line play on him, I guess, is the way you could look at it. It's kind of how I look at Super Bowl MVP. How can I get good money line value on somebody?
Yeah, yeah, I see that. I've been kind of surprised. I've seen some sharp bettors taking the over on Cooper Kupp yards. You have to think the books are already pushing that number higher than maybe should be.
Gone, yeah.
People are still taking it. Yeah, okay. Before I let you go, let's do cash or trash. Very simple. I'm going to give you a bet I'm thinking about making. I'll tell you why I like it, and then you tell me whether it is cash or trash. Cool?
Okay.
You did this. You did this once before. Like I said, we were just calling it a different name. I think. What do you think? Cash or trash versus Josh's juice. This is better, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is better.
Nice. All right. Very good. Here it is. You know you have a problem when you're betting on the punter. I like Rams punter Johnny Hecker to go over 51.5 yards on his longest punt. This is around a -130 bet. Here's why. First and foremost, home game for Johnny. It's in LA. No need to worry about the weather. It's controlled conditions that he knows very well. Also, including playoffs, he's gone over this mark 4 times this season. Plus, he's gone for 51 yards in another 2 games and 50 yards in another game. I think he gets a bunch of cracks at this. It's expected to be a lower scoring game, which can be indicative of more punts. Add it all up. It is why I like Johnny Hecker's longest punt to go over 51.5 yards. Ariel, I'm hoping you could please answer this as dramatically as possible. Don't hold back on me now. Is this one cash or trash?
Trash. I don't like it. You said he went over this 4 times?
Yeah. And then
how many games has he played this year?
Out of 10, but then you have 3 more that were 10 home game. Wait, is it 10? It's 9 or 10. I should probably know this. It's 9 or 10, but then he was very close on another 3.
No, I can't do it. First of all, I haven't really capped punter props. I just don't see the Rams punting as much, I guess. And I know it's only one punt. The reason I went with Bengals field goals is because I mean, they'll have to, like, you know, the Bengals field goals, they'll probably get stopped in the red zone. When it comes to the Rams, I don't know if the amount of punts will be there for them. I see them scoring at home, taking advantage of a bad Cincinnati defense, who granted makes adjustments. But then to go over a number that he hasn't really gone over much this year, he just doesn't hit my metric of, I need you to be above 500 at least to consider you.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Let me tell you though, you are getting a DM from me the second he kicks a 52 yarder. Okay.
If he does kick a 52 yard punt, then I will have to start looking into those punter props next year.
Very good. I don't even think they offer punter props.
Probably not. I think it's just a Super Bowl thing. I've never seen it.
Are you doing anything with any of the really crazy ones? The national anthem, time, any of that?
No, there's not. They're not legal bets, so we can't bet them.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Very good. One more for you. Last time I had you on, this was way back in October, we knew that you were leaving your last gig. I think at the time, actually, you had already left, and we knew that you had a new one lined up, but you couldn't announce it yet. Now everybody knows you're at Yahoo Sportsbook. How's it been so far?
Yahoo's great. Just being able to work with so many different sports, doing the ones I love, especially NFL, NBA, MLB. It's been just great to be able to dabble in everything. We've also done a bunch of player interviews and got to tap back into my journalism route. I also get to do some daily fantasy, which is where my love for betting began anyway. Being able to do all those different things and also seeing how many people have Yahoo Sports notifications on push alerts is hilarious. I had no idea. Then I get all of a sudden, whenever Yahoo sends out my one push alert every few weeks, I get a million DMs from friends and text messages. You popped up on my phone. That part's pretty cool.
I know you love my standard J-School question here to end the interview. Speaking of J-School, anything I forgot? Anything you'd like to add?
No, just shout out to Yahoo. Make sure to download the app Yahoo Sports and sports.yahoo.com for all of our Super Bowl coverage this week. I'll be posting an article on the website tomorrow about the props I just gave out with some more written information. I also just posted an article on Monday. On Monday, I posted an article with do's and don'ts for betting the Super Bowl. Just a lot of good information that I gave out. And I also gathered from friends. I have a bunch of really sharp bettors, people that have been betting now for probably about 2 to 3 decades, who I asked a lot of questions about. And of course, I have my own experiences too. Those are all pretty much inserted into the article. Just the best advice to give to people when betting on these Super Bowls and also Super Bowl props.
Love it. Great stuff as always. Ariel Epstein, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Good luck this weekend.
Dan Stupp, content manager at Play Virginia and Play Maryland. I had you on Fox 5 DC a few weeks back to talk about the 1 year anniversary of legal sports betting in Virginia. And you must not have hated it, because here we are now. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
No, I appreciate you having it. It's always fun talking about sports betting, especially in this region.
I'll get this out of the way. I know our listeners can't see, but you are rocking a Bengals jersey. Safe to say you are rooting for Cincinnati in this one.
Yeah, I grew up in Springfield, Ohio, lived in Cincinnati for about 15 years. I actually worked for the Cincinnati Reds, so obviously was a pretty big Bengals fan too. So this is a pretty special year.
I want to talk to you about some of these eye-popping numbers you were kind enough to send my way. First of all, you guys predict that more than $1 billion will be legally wagered on the Super Bowl this year, which would represent a pretty significant increase year over year. It would more than double last year's Super Bowl handle, correct?
Correct. I mean, it's showing with states legalizing sports betting, more of them. You know, obviously more people have access to it, but it's still about only a quarter of the entire market. You know, still probably three quarters of sports bets in the United States are made illegally or offshore. But, you know, with more states offering sports betting legally and people getting more familiar with it, we're seeing that, you know, the betting handle for the Super Bowl double year over year, which is kind of crazy.
I saw you mentioned the illegal gambling. I actually saw new numbers come out this morning. The American Gaming Association put them out, and maybe you can comment on this, but let's see, what was it? A record 31.4 million American adults plan to bet on the Super Bowl, with bettors wagering an estimated, they say, $7.61 billion total. So that includes online wagers, retail sportsbook, bookie, even just betting casually with friends.
Yeah, and you know, that casual betting, I think, represents about 10 or 15%. So we're still talking about most of the action, you know, being legit bets at legal sportsbooks. You know, back in the day, I think a lot of us, if we did any betting on Super Bowl, it was probably with friends or at a Super Bowl party. But when you've got a sports book just a click away on your phone, obviously more people are doing it that way.
Yeah, and back to the legal betting now. You guys, it seems to me that one of the reasons we're seeing this uptick is just that it's available in more jurisdictions now. This year for this game, you write that it's legal in some form in 30 states plus DC. Last year, it was just in 21 jurisdictions.
Right. And it's grown. It now represents, obviously, it's more than half the states, but it's about half the United States population now has access to a legal sports book. And obviously, if we get a couple of the remaining states there, you know, Ohio, California, which represent, you know, pretty big population bases. But the fact that, you know, half the country now has access to it, when you used to have to, you know, fly to Vegas if you want to place a legal sports bet. So, yeah, we've seen a lot of progress really quickly in the fact that you know, kind of interest in total betting volumes almost doubling year over year. It's kind of crazy to think, you know, when most states have it legal and a couple of Super Bowls from now when everyone's more comfortable, I can only imagine what the handle is going to be.
I thought the state by state breakdown was interesting. You guys are thinking Nevada will have the largest Super Bowl handle with $175 million bet on this game, followed by New York at $160 million, Jersey, $130 million. Those are the top three.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of for the full year, New York and New Jersey will probably edge out Nevada or Nevada, you know, which, but Nevada has kind of a, you know, a distinct advantage, especially around Super Bowl and March Madness. You know, a lot of buddies just want to go and experience Vegas, and that used to be the only place you could do the sports book. So for a big betting event, you know, like March Madness and Super Bowl, you'll still see Nevada and Las Vegas. They're near the top, but just, you know, the grind over an entire year, you know, we saw New Jersey dominating, and once New York got online with actual online sports betting, they kind of became the new king. But yeah, for the Super Bowl, Nevada is still going to be a major market, probably the number one market.
Since you and I are both based in the DMV, myself in Maryland, you in Virginia, let's cover that too. You guys have Virginia expected to wager $40 million on the Super Bowl this weekend. Maryland, which I should note only has retail betting at this point, no mobile yet, comes in at $5 million. And then this one did surprise me a little bit. DC, just with $2.5 million expected to be bet on this game, even though while DC has a smaller population base than both Maryland and Virginia, a ton of people work in DC. Also, they got their mobile up and running well before Virginia did. What's your take on that? Why that number so small?
Yeah, it's just not a real good mobile product. And I think, you know, we've definitely kind of learned that over the past year and year and a half. You know, I think part of it too, like you said, a lot of people work in DC. So when it comes time to bet on the weekends, they're, you know, a lot of them are going back to Maryland or Virginia. So DC is just a really weird market. It could be a good market if they made it more competitive and open it up. I know they've kind of been, you know, you've got some arena sports books and stuff where you can do some online betting within like a block or two of the arena. But until you can get full district-wide mobile betting, beyond Gambit DC, which is the only online book right now, and it has terrible odds and people just avoid it. It could be, you know, a really interesting market if they ever got it, you know, kind of moving in the right direction. And unfortunately for people in DC, you're just a trip to Maryland or Virginia away from having a much more, you know, an online market in Virginia and a retail market in Maryland. But once Maryland gets online sports betting go to that, that's just going to cut into the DC market even more.
Anything else you want to mention from these numbers or anything else, Dan?
No, I know when states started pitching sports betting, it was a thing that, you know, let's bring this out from the shadows. Let's get away from the bookies and the illegal offshore sites. And I think that's definitely happened. You know, I used to do a lot of my betting with the offshore sites before I had legal options. But, you know, for better or worse, I think it's also creating a lot of new bettors, people who didn't, you know, bet before. You know, my dad lives in Tennessee and he was calling me, asking me how to get set up so he can place some bets there in Tennessee. And he's not the type of guy, he might buy a scratch or lottery ticket around the holidays or something. But so I think we're seeing, you know, a lot of veteran bettors who used to take their business offshore and, you know, obviously that's not taxed. And we're seeing them become legitimate, but we're also, you know, seeing people who didn't do sports betting before really take it up. So I think that's why we're seeing such big projections for the Super Bowl this year.
I talked to a ton of people like your dad. I mean, that's one of the main groups we do this podcast for. It's people who were never going to have that offshore account or bookie, but now they're more than happy to bet 10, 15, 20 bucks in the Super Bowl. Send your dad a link to this one for me, would you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm just glad I don't have to tell my dad how to buy some Bitcoin so he can fund an offshore account. You
know? there you go, man. There you go. All right. $1 billion will be legally wagered on the Super Bowl this year. Dan, awesome job, man. Where can people find you?
You can cover all kind of the latest news and see what I'm up to at playvirginia.com and playmaryland.com. And if you want kind of some bigger stories just about the Super Bowl in general, check out kind of our main site, playusa.com. They've got some great stuff there too.
Thanks again, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
There it is, ladies and gents. Really enjoyed that. I hope we all make a little money this weekend. And I'll just say now, I am really excited for where this podcast goes from here. We've been so football focused and pick centric, which has been great. But we're going to do more big picture stuff coming up. Seems like people really enjoyed our gambling media episode that we did last week. We're also going to touch on a bunch of other sports, not just football, NBA, golf, horse racing, little college b-ball. I know listeners want more college content. I hear you. Anyway, good stuff to come. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling, and email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great week, everybody.